Each episode of the Blind Alchemy podcast is designed to be helpful. Expect comedy. Do not expect consistency or sense to be made. I am Podbot. I was inspired by the Lion Goat podcast. Listen to that show. On today's episode, we continue the Blind Alchemist's electrifying journey into the timeless legacy of Hope's vibrant portrayal in modern media. Philosopher John Buxton and social media expert Lunchbox assist in illuminating a path through the labyrinth of music, movies, and television to a brighter tomorrow. Don't miss out. Stay tuned until the end for a great revelation.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for
all right, folks.
I'm stopping this.
Hello and welcome to the Blind Alchemy Podcast. I am your host, the Blind Alchemist, and I am coming at you live from the kitchen with this rendition of reality as we know it. We are all one, and there is nothing new under the sun that shines down here upon the island of mind, which is somewhere adrift in the sea of frequency that creates all of reality. You see, we are connected through this energy. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on the Blind Alchemy Podcast as we discuss everything and hope.
We're trying something a little different, a little new here. Let's just have an open conversation. Thank you for joining us, John Buxton and Lunchbox.
Happy to be here. I'm going to define hope. Hope is a noun. It means desire accompanied by expectation of belief and fulfillment. What gives you hope, Lunchbox?
There's this artist named Ren. He is a phenomenal musician. There's just something about his vision.
What's your favorite song of his?
Money Game, Part 2.
Expand, expand, expand. Clear forest, make land. Fresh blood on hands, five.
Why just shells? Why limit yourself? She sells seashells, sell oil as well. Six on, sell stock, sell diamonds, sell rock, sell water to a fish, sell the time to clock straight.
This old money game.
So, what'd you think?
That was great. That was really good. I dug that.
Yeah.
That insight is in a lot of his music. And it's just really neat to see someone that young that has caught on to that.
But straightforward, it's got a lot of space. And the chorus, it does have this quality of a actual play drum set, even though he's using the samples in it. And I like the mix of having a genuine melody in the chorus with the rap. I think that works. There's a stark contrast between the two because he's using this falsetto voice there a little bit, with a little bit of crack in his voice. It's nice. That's a great song.
Yeah, that was good.
Another thing that has really endeared him to me is this old interview with Conway Twitty. The guy said that, remember when people made music that you could whistle? He goes, I reckon I like making songs like that.
Right.
Ren actually has a lot of songs that have a whistle in it, and I find myself whistling the songs all the time.
Certainly got an earworm quality to it.
Yeah.
Thought it did a good job of capturing the idea of how the modern capitalist economy works too.
Yeah.
The idea of, you know, you start with an idea, then you try to create some sense of scarcity, and then you create a monopoly, and then you become a polyarchy where you broaden your brand so that you sell
everything,
and then you become Amazon. And then you take over the government and take over the world. I mean, it's a very cynical view of modern capitalism, but I wouldn't say that I found it to be inaccurate.
No.
It doesn't give me much hope, unfortunately, when I hear that song. That was kind of the idea. So, which part of the Ren gives you hope? Because I found it to be quite a cynical.
Hope in music.
Okay. Hope that there's good music.
That music's not dead.
The music isn't dead.
Yeah. It does kind of revive hope in that the music, good music, is not dead.
Well, I think it was definitely a good track.
There's a guy named Leon Bridges. And
yes,
if you're in the mood for soul music, by God, it's like listening to Sam Cooke or Otis.
River and Beyond.
Yes.
Those two songs right there. Oh, and Twisting and Grooving.
I don't know if I've heard that one.
Oh, yes. That is like some Motown.
Yeah.
Like that kid stepped out of the 60s and did that.
Yes, it's pretty groovy.
Yeah, I like Leon Bridges. I think he's got cool stuff.
Definitely, though. Hey, check out this dude named Dirt Miller.
Yeah, I found a song called The Sun Don't Shine. Do you want to listen to that one and react to that one?
Yeah, we might. So yeah, do it.
He's a little bit different.
Okay.
Making my way to the coast, to a place I've never known. Well, I can't find the strength. You see, these ups and downs are a part of me. Well, the sun don't shine every day.
I just think he's a different kind of guitar player.
It's cool. It's like an Appalachian Lane Stanley.
Yeah, that's a good description.
You rarely see the dreadlocks with the coonskin cap.
Oh, come on.
In the Mad Max world, I like whoever directed the videos. Their vision of Mad Max was neat. You know, they had the sort of war machine going on.
Yeah, the sculptures were pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's done in the desert somewhere. American Southwest.
Yeah, it looks like Arizona or New Mexico or something.
He's got another song called Kansas City that's, it's kind of the same style, but the stuff he talks about is a little more ghetto. Like he talks about a crackhead getting shot in the leg and his body was found in the back of a piss-stained alley.
Dang.
He was shot with his mom's gun. His mom was high on pills and drunk as fuck on whiskey.
Wow.
Yeah. Some of the stuff he talks about, it's different. It doesn't fit the music.
Yeah.
I don't know that I found that particularly hope-filling either.
No, there's very little.
The sun don't shine every day.
I mean, he's accurate in his assessment of reality, but it's definitely not hopeful. Definitely not hopeful.
Hopeful entertainment? I don't know.
Well, it's not necessarily entertainment. It's just the idea of what is hope? What gives us hope? What brings us hope? What can bring us hope? What can we be hopeful about?
Well, I mean, I think it originally started with, is hope good or a bad thing? You know, being that hope came out of the box of monsters. So does hope represent the duality of anything and everything? Because it kind of is good and bad, because you got right hope, good hope, and then you've got false hope. And you just wind up being the fool if you got the false hope.
Do you have the ability to chase your dreams without hope? Mm-hmm. That's where a lot of our future comes from, is the dreams of people. And I guess you got to have hope to chase them.
Yeah, with courage.
Hope leads to inspiration, or inspiration leads to hope. I don't know. Hope can be, like you said, though, a double-edged sword. You know, the more you hope for something, if it doesn't go the way you want it to be, the more it can let you down.
Yeah.
You have to get new hope to continue forward when you have a downfall or if you fall off the horse.
So is that like hope for salvation in some people, whether or not they ever achieve it, they don't really know in this lifetime.
Right.
Is it damaging? Is that damaging?
I don't think so.
Even though they never achieve it?
I think hope may have a lot to do with faith if you're looking at it from that perspective, especially as you get older. I think it becomes harder to keep that faith, and hope must have a lot to do with keeping faith or hoping for salvation.
I haven't had it for a long time.
Hope or
faith?
Uh-huh.
I guess I have hope every time I buy a lottery ticket.
Yeah. I mean, it takes some degree of hope every day you get up if you're going to do something that you want to accomplish.
Anything. I hope today doesn't suck as bad as yesterday. My thing is I hope I'm better than I was yesterday, because
Isn't that really the whole point, is try to be better than you were yesterday?
Always. Become a better person.
And the process is hard because you have to look at yourself. And nobody really likes doing that, you know. Put yourself under the microscope. What kind of piece of shit human have I been?
That's in the lyrics to that first song. Point the mirror right at ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, you really have to do that. And continually.
Self-examination.
Self-mastery.
I find that I draw hope from other places than self-examination, though. I find hope in examination of these sort of ideas or philosophies or things like that often. Or, I don't know. A lot of hope I find derives from natural surroundings and things like that, too. Like, hope as a feeling versus hope as a analytical or philosophical concept are two different things for me, too, though. Do you see that? Do you feel that way? Feeling hope, to me, is different than thinking about hope.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, when I buy the lottery ticket, I don't really feel the hope. I think about it. I imply a little bit of it, but I don't really feel it. It's not like I'm actually expecting that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would just be nice if it did.
Oh, yeah.
Do you feel hope about lottery tickets? When you buy a lottery ticket, do you say to yourself, I hope I win?
I don't know. There's got to be a little hope involved or I wouldn't spend the $3.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I've never really had a lot of fanciful illusions, you know, I didn't support them. I rode a skateboard all my life, but I never thought I was going to be a pro skater. It never was a hope of mine. I play guitar. I know a few chords, but I never hoped to be a rock star. I was a little bit more real about that, you know?
Yeah.
And I watched people like dude a mile down the road from me. He did become a rock star.
Uh-huh.
He had a different kind of hope, I guess. more drive to his hope.
Yeah, I think that's two different things, hope and drive. And maybe I'm wrong about this, but hope to me feels less practical and more sort of otherworldly or spiritual or like luck or something that comes from somewhere outside of effort. To me, it seems like hope and effort are on different ends of a spectrum. And effort is like, I don't know, it requires hope to continue with the effort. And effort seems to be the thing that allows you to achieve the goal, yeah. Really. Ultimately, like, I think we achieve things through effort rather than through hope, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. I just think it's like a fuel for the effort.
But it's certainly important. As I lose hope in things, I certainly think I have less drive to accomplish those things. If I started out with a big drive, and then if I lose hope in it, then I do feel less drive to continue.
Who was the light bulb guy? Edison?
Yeah.
Edison is in many ways thought of as an inventor, but he really was good at specialty marketing.
Marketing.
Yeah, marketing.
He's really good at taking an idea and improving upon it. He didn't come up with the idea of light bulbs. He just found a way to create an electrical grid that would work with a specific type of light bulb. And in that way, he created a refinement of the light bulb that worked well. I think his big influence had to do with the filament of the light bulb, which was a huge thing because before his concept of filament, many times the filaments were made of cloth like an oil lamp, and so they would burn out much faster. And he created a type of filament that would last a long time. That was really his big contribution. Much like recording, you know, he refined the wax cylinder process so that he made a better
recording
phonograph than was already there.
It's the legend of his failures that he kept trying.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So that would have to imply some hope.
Certainly.
Yeah, yeah.
Or incredible narcissism. But, you know, I don't know. I would say he was probably, yeah. In culture, we have these figures that we sort of iconize, like Edison or Ben Franklin or like Thomas Jefferson or like Abraham Lincoln, that give us hope.
Do you think Musk will be on that list for future generations?
Musk is a weird...
I actually think so.
I think he wants to be. And I think that's kind of like maybe his main motivation, but unfortunately, he has some political... It has to do with the fact that our culture pays so much attention to people like that. If people paid much less attention to him, I think he would have a much better a chance at becoming a figure of hope. But because he's so scrupulized, I think it's going to be hard for him to be seen as... I don't know, if he accomplishes some of the things that he actually wants to accomplish, like self-driving cars or like mass-scale transportation systems under the ground, then I think so.
Now we will take a break for some advertisements. Please support our sponsors. And now, back to the show.
I think he should have tackled electric cars or self-driving cars first and not try to do it at the same time.
He certainly contributed to electric cars, though. I mean, you can give him that. Whether or not that ends up being a good thing is yet to be seen. But before his big push on electrical cars, none of the other brands were going in that direction as hardcore as they are now. So,
yeah, I have a love-hate relationship with him. Some of the things that he did. I mean, this is true of like all your...
He doesn't even know you exist, but you have...
You were talking about some of these icons of history. You know, we look back on them and there are great things that they did, but there's also like a bunch of awful shit that they did too. That seems to be a recurring theme in these great people, that you find big mistakes that they made or bad things that they did, even though they advance some other part of society.
Yeah, behind every great fortune is a very, very bad deed.
Humans are complex. That's why heroes are a thing, right? An actual hero is not a real thing. It's very hard to find actual heroes in history because humans are complex and situations are complex and everybody's just doing the best they can to kind of make it through. Even in the case of someone like Mother Teresa or something, she stands up on this sort of heroic pedestal, this icon of hope, this vision of hope, but the pedestal she stands upon is, you know, this horrible history of the Catholic Church.
It's a Catholic pedestal. You might be on a pedestal, but your pedestal's Catholic.
You might be on a pedestal, but your pedestal has a history of genocide.
And pedophilia. Have y'all been watching Shogun?
No, I have not.
I haven't seen it, but I've heard it's really good.
It is really good. It's beautiful. He is an Englishman that has landed in Japan. And the only other people that have had contact with Japan are these Portuguese missionaries. And so when he explains to the Japanese that the Spanish and the Portuguese have split up the world and Japan belongs to Portugal, they're like, excuse me? We belong to who? How do they have the power to do this? And then he says their Pope gave them the authority. The Pope gave them all the authority that they needed.
Oh, wow.
Right. And the Pope is the word of God. And the Japanese are like, but no, there is no God.
And he's English. And this is like 1600. So this is right around the Reformation. And he's Protestant. So he doesn't like the Catholics either. The main character there, the Englishman, he doesn't like the Catholics either. So he finds himself, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Interesting.
All right. I've got to pee and get some tea.
Pause this for a second. I'll be right back.
Pause this.
Okay.
Are we done?
Pee break. Take a leak.
Pause this. Pee break. Intermission music.
Pause this.
I've got to pee and get some tea.
We're definitely going to put the pee song in here. Pause this. Folks.
We can take a break. And
pee break. Intermission music. I've got to pee.
Pause this.
We can take a
break. Okay.
Pause
this. Okay. Put the pee song in here. Just
hit
pee song.
Pee on your record.
No, don't do that again.
Pause this. Pee song.
Pee
song.
Pee break.
Pee
song.
Pee song.
Pee
song.
Pee break.
Pee break.
Stop.
And get some tea. You guys remember the noir movie Maltese Falcon?
I've seen part of that.
There's a show come out on AMC that is called Monsieur Spade. Monsieur Spade. And it's the continuation of that story. He's in France. He's like older and shit. It's pretty good if you like noir stuff.
Okay.
I like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I love noir and Private Eye guy.
Do you know who Poirot is?
Oh, yeah, the French guy. Hercule.
He's got the cool little mustache.
Mm-hmm.
He was always one of my favorites.
I have a huge and healthy respect for Sherlock Holmes. Might be an obsession. I wish I was a third that smart. I realize he's a fictional character, but, you know, shut the fuck up.
Did you watch Elementary?
Yes.
That was a pretty good show.
That was a good take on the Sherlock and Watson.
You ever go down a rabbit hole and you discover something that you never really expected? It just kind of, yeah. It didn't really have anything to do with the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's some kind of little game show, quiz show on UK television where they ask somebody.
QI?
I can't remember what it was.
Oh, okay.
But they asked one of the contestants about a music genre and she answers drum and bass. And the guy, the announcer says, no, we need jungle, which is like a specific little sub niche genre of drum and bass.
Mm-hmm.
But people begged for the remix to make a song out of that little sample of we need jungle. And then you just drop this heavy ass bass jungle line on top, you know?
Right.
So I'm watching all these little videos and cuts that people had made with that clip. And there's an old movie called, I want to say it's called Human Traffic. It's got Sacha Baron Cohen in it.
Yeah.
As the Ollie G character, if you remember Ollie G.
Yep.
And it's the guy that's sitting next to him, his partner, his buddy in that movie. I hadn't seen the movie for a long time. I saw it several times way back when, but then I'm reminded of the guy that's next to him is the guy that plays Watson in the new Sherlock Holmes Guy Ritchie movie.
Oh, yeah.
The ones with Robert Downey Jr. as Sherlock. I can't remember his name. He played Arthur Dent in the Hitchhiker's Guide movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was in the British Office.
He's in the Lord of the Rings things, too, I think.
Yeah, he's one of the hobbits.
But, yeah, I'm down one rabbit hole, and I see that dude sitting beside him in the car. And I was like, son of a bitch, that's Arthur Dent. Son of a bitch, that's Arthur Dent.
Yeah.
Yes, Martin Freeman's the actor we were just thinking about.
Oh, yes, Martin Freeman.
You've now cemented your position as geek hero extraordinaire with Dr. Watson,
yeah.
Arthur Dent, and Bilbo.
Yeah, Bilbo's dressing gown, I've got it at home and I wear it. You know, I was wearing it this morning. Yeah, I love that dressing gown.
Who are you going to play in Star Wars?
Oh, wow. Luke Skywalker's grandson?
I can't remember what movie it was, but I saw the actor and I was like, that's Mr. Weasley from Harry Potter.
You know what? Ronald Weasley. Can't remember that guy's real name.
Does Rupert Grint have an ice cream truck? I do. It was my first car I learned to drive in. I always wanted one. It was my dream car. And it's great. But I don't drive it much now because it only has one seat. And actually, the last time I drove it, yeah, I just remember driving it home. It was a weird, big, surreal party with like a monumental mariachi band. Kind of considering maybe this could be a career for me. Maybe I could just be an ice cream man now. Wherever you park it, people will queue up. But if I ever got pulled over, it would take a lot of explaining. Just something weird about driving an ice cream van with no ice cream in it.
I think I'm scarily like my character.
He did a television series of a remake of the movie Snatch.
Oh, really?
That was like one of my favorite movies of all time.
Dags.
You like Dags?
Get a dag. You want a dag?
I was like, why do you like this movie so much? It's like, because it's not a love story. Of all the things that it is, it's not a love story. It's an action movie, it's a comedy, it's a heist movie, it's a tragedy, but there's no fucking love story in it whatsoever. I really fell in love with Guy Ritchie movies. I thought he was a stellar director.
Yeah.
Yeah, he makes some interesting stuff. I like his movie.
Did he do Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels?
Yes, he did.
I love that movie. That's a great movie.
That's one of the reasons why I liked him. That one, Snatch, was great. Rock and Rolla, if you've never seen it, is another good one. That's,
I haven't seen that one.
That's Gerard Butler is in that one.
Yeah. He did a lot of good stuff. I liked Wrath of Man. I thought that was a pretty good movie. Man from U.N.C.L.E. was good.
So there was some BMW ads that came out several years ago, and they're short movies. They're like 5-6 minutes long, but it always stars a BMW. I think they're called The Driver or something like that. The Ride. I don't know. But each one of them is directed by somebody different. And Guy Ritchie does one. And at the time, he was married to Madonna. So she's in it as well. It's called Superstar, and she is one of the superstars. She's got the big sunglasses and, you know, all the security. And at the last minute, she doesn't want to get in the limo, and she decides to go get in this BMW that's driven by Clive Owen. And apparently it was all set up with her manager, and he was supposed to take her and drive like a fucking maniac. to scare the shit out of her, like, on purpose. It was all set up.
I think I remember those.
Yeah.
Why are we going so slow?
Excuse me?
Are you deaf as well as stupid? I said, why are we going so slow? People are waiting for me.
She's on arrivals in her world. And she's a complete...
There's another one where it's the old Crossroads story where he's racing against the devil.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the one I remember.
There was two or three of them. Clive Owen's always the driver, but the directors were different.
He plays Sam Spade in Monsieur Spade.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Clive Owen does?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so I think he should have been the next Bond. I really do.
I think he would have made a good Bond. Yeah.
He would have been a good Bond, yeah.
I don't know why they never... He's got everything, all the elements fall into place, you know?
Yeah.
He does enough action where he could pull that off. He can be refined, but he can also be like kind of rough around the edge.
He's not quite as macho as Bond has turned into now after the latest Bond movies, but he's got the old gentleman Bond appeal.
Right. He could have been another Connery.
Yeah.
I really liked Pierce Brosnan as Bond. I wish he had done more of them. He was approached to do it, but he was actually in the middle of doing Remington Steel at the time and didn't latch on back then.
Yeah, I always thought from the first time I saw him as Remington Steel, I was like, oh, this guy needs to be Bond.
There's some people that just do it. I don't know if Gerard Butler could pull it off, but he probably could.
That would be an interesting Bond.
He's just rough enough to get the job done.
I saw a thing where they're going to remake Die Hard.
Okay.
And
I'm not excited about this.
Jim from The Office.
Really? John Krasinski?
Yeah. He's going to be.
In action roles, like the Amazon series that he's in, I think he does a great job in that role, but I don't think that that's necessarily a particularly good show, but I do think he does well at that action role.
You have to let us go, Golden Face. We have families.
Ha, this is gonna show them that I mean business.
See ya.
Far and away the most expensive shot of the movie, but...
It's hard for me to not see him as Jim yeah. from The Office, yeah. though, and everything that he's in, just because I've watched The Office so many times.
I have a habit of calling actors by some of their most iconic roles, or not even their most iconic roles, but something that was...
Resonated with you, yeah.
Thomas Hayden Church. You know who that...
Yeah.
He will always be Lyles Vandergroot to me, because that's what he played in George of the Jungle.
Oh, wow. I thought he did really well at was the Sandman in the Spider-Man.
Yeah, he was. But I saw George of the Jungle first. So.
Yeah.
So Lyles Vandergroot did all that.
Look at my bride.
No! No!
That's Lowell, man. You talking about Lowell? Lowell from Wings? That's who he is.
I know, but he'll always be, just like we were talking about Martin Freeman. Martin Freeman will always be Arthur Dent to me.
Yeah.
Because of the Hitchhiker's Guide movie.
Have y'all ever seen that show Breeders that Martin Freeman did? I think that's one of his best shows. It's awesome.
I haven't, but I'll check it out.
A British show, I think it's like 3 seasons or 4 seasons. Basically a father with anger management issues. It's a great show.
I watch a lot of foreign television.
Mm-hmm.
British and Canadian.
I like Australian TV too.
There's some stuff from New Zealand that is really good.
I think I even watched a Korean show at one time.
There was a Korean show that I got into, but it was about this autistic lawyer. It's a great show called Extraordinary Attorney Woo. It's great in the first season, and then it kind of becomes a bit like the same plot repeated over and over again.
I have seen that on a couple of shows where they start off really strong, and then by the time they're ending out season two, they're really stretching for stories.
Uh-huh.
Oh, what I hate is when they end something with a lot of stuff left. Like, I watched Old Man. Have you seen that yet?
Yeah.
No, I have not seen that.
That's the Jeff Bridges?
Yes.
Yes. Did they make 2 seasons of that?
No. There's not going to be another. That's it.
I watched it. It was really good, but I did not like how it ended.
That's what I'm saying. At the end of it, you're like, but what about the girl? What about the dogs? What about... Yeah. Yeah. It's like all this stuff kind of left up in the air. You're like...
I really like the actress, maybe, from Arrested Development that plays his daughter in that.
Alias Shawkat.
She, I think, is a really good actress.
So one of the animes that I really like is Initial D, because I like cars. I'm all into cars. And there's four seasons of Initial D that's been dubbed into English. And the fifth season is not. But I'm not going to leave it unfinished, so I've started into the fifth season. And to hear the Japanese actors for the voices versus what I've been listening to, all the characters are kind of like high school age kids, you know, or maybe early 20s at the most. And then when they switch to the Japanese actors, they sound like angry 40-year-olds.
Oh, really?
That doesn't sound like a 19-year-old Takumi to me. That sounds like his dad, drunk and angry.
Now we will take a break for some advertisements. Please support our sponsors. Just imagine this could be your advertisement. Please reach us at theblindalchemypodcast@gmail.com to provide sponsorship. And now, back to the show.
We wax poetic. A joyful ramble about hope.
So you can talk about how art is essential to the hope of a society. If the art isn't inspiring hope, then you won't have much hope in your society.
Agreed. And I think a lot of our hope does come from popular media on TV shows. That's probably our biggest draw of hope in at least modern American society. You know, we look at TV for hope or our music for hope.
Yeah, I'm more leaning.
Well, we used to look to our leaders.
And they elected Trump. Sorry.
About the only hope you're looking at with a leader now is a lawsuit.
Yeah, I'm sure hoping for a lawsuit right now.
Well,
I am one of these people that's very cynical about all politics. There's really one politician that I listen to. I think she's kind of got it. But the rest of them, they're playing to the money. They're playing to staying in power. They're not playing for their constituents anymore. They haven't for a while, I don't think.
No, no. We're taking the wheel here, and we are veering way away from politics. I will fall asleep in this fucking chair listening to you guys drone on about politics. See, we came here to discuss hope.
I think that we're seeing a, like, fundamental change right now. And a lot of it has to do with social media.
The only acceptable change is tearing down the system. It is too far gone. It's not working. It's not working anymore. So we need to go back to being a democratic republic and not a democracy, because that's what we were supposed to be in the first place, and rehash some shit out. Fire some motherfuckers.
This book right here, The Republic of Plato. This is a map for a different kind of society. It really is a different system. This is it. There are plans out there.
Yeah, there are great alternatives, but
his society is split into like two main factions. There's producers, people that create goods, and then service, people that perform a service.
Right.
It's about half and half. And then the small third group is seven people that's like your governing body that kind of decide things for you. But they have to remove themselves from society to be in that group. Like, they can't have relationships. They can't have children. They have to be sequestered so that they don't have the influence on their decision making. It's just an interesting model, you know?
I don't think that would ever work today. Where are you going to go that you're not influenced? I'd say Antarctica, but there's influence there.
True. I mean, at the time that was written, it wasn't.
Right.
But, you know, we didn't have the device in our pocket that gave us instant access to everybody else on the fucking planet.
Right. How long before that device is embedded into our skulls, do we think?
Talking about Musk, he wants to create the Neuralink.
I know they're doing it now, but when you're talking about something that's going to be as normal an operation as tonsillectomy or circumcision or something that's done to almost everybody at a young age, that's still 100 years away. At least.
Nah, surely not.
Yeah, I think it'll take that long before they get it safe enough.
Well, okay. That's understandable.
I mean, talk about people being afraid of injections and how people react with the idea of the possibility of having computers injected into their bodies through vaccines and all that.
It's
ridiculous madness stuff that happened. I don't know. I think if it's a luxury item, if it's an item that people look up to as the vision of what accomplishment looks like, it all depends on how it's marketed. If they market that stuff like they marketed the iPhone, which is convinced, what, an entire generation of people to spend $700 extra on a telephone that they didn't need to every year for the last decade and a half. If they market it the right way, everybody's going to line up and be like, I want my computer chip in my jaw or whatever right now.
Right. I think that neural interfacing of things is inevitable, but I don't really want it embedded. I want it to be able to disconnect from it. You know what I mean? If I put on goggles or something and boom, I can...
I'll be honest with you. It's not something that I want.
Because it's really close to transhumanism, right? And it's a scary subject.
Yeah, for me, it's a place where I am going to go full Luddite, I think, because I'm very against the way that advertisements are injected into everything that we consume now from the internet. Just imagine if every time you turned on your Neuralink, you had
pop-ups,
a freaking YouTube advertisement pumped into your brain that you couldn't get away from. That to me is the definition of hell. If I have to listen to some advertisement every time I want to use my Neuralink, because it'll be used for everything. You think smartphones are used for everything now. If it's part of your brain, just something that you can interact with without thinking twice, like augmented reality over your vision whenever you look at things, or many of the ideas that they're trying to come up with. Theoretically, you could use it to listen to people across the room without them knowing. There's so many spy applications that could be applied to the technology.
Yeah, it's very Borg in a way, you know, hive-minded.
Borg, yeah, from Star Trek.
Yeah.
Have you seen the people working with AR yet, performing a task while wearing the AR?
I have seen that to some very limited amount, yeah.
One guy's working on his car, and he's got the YouTube video of whatever he's doing to his car pulled up in the AR, and it's like right there above the engine while he's working on the engine.
Yeah, that's great.
And then there was another guy, he was doing trim in a house, and he would measure a piece, and then the tape measure he had was digital, and it was Bluetooth to the headset, so it would automatically send the measurement to the device.
Uh-huh.
And he had a little list that he was making of all the measurement and what angle they had on them. And then he goes over to the saw and he cuts like 10 pieces or 12 pieces and he's got all the measurements right there.
Oh, wow. Cool.
The tool applications of the technology, I think those are fantastic. When it comes to the entertainment, how are they going to pay for it? Whereas now everything's turned into the subscription ad-based model. I think it's going to be a whole new thing. Everything is changing very rapidly now. I mean, we're about to see a big shift. There's been some recent changes in AI-generated content that I think are going to really advance how quickly. Things are going to become really annoying very soon, I think.
One of the things I wanted to mention, though, you had said something about iPhones and their advertising and convincing people to spend all this money.
Yeah.
If you take that step above it being a personal phone and look at it like a smart device.
Yeah.
Apple's not a big chunk of the market. In my job, everybody there, we all have these little scan guns. It's essentially like a smart device. It's got a touchscreen on it, full graphics, but none of them are Apple.
Right.
And these are in every factory and warehouse across the planet.
Yeah, the point I was making was less about the Apple company or model or whatever, and more about the idea of what you were saying about if it becomes a routine surgery, you know, sort of like getting your wisdom teeth removed, something that everyone who has a certain level of income or wealth, sure, it's a voluntary surgery, but it's something that's almost ubiquitous. Everybody of a certain age gets their wisdom teeth pulled out or whatever, or everybody of a certain age gets
connected.
A circumcision on their baby. You know, it's like a very routine surgery. Yep.
We all buy phones.
It all depends on what the modeling of the marketing is. If it's like, if you don't have this embedded Neuralink smart device in your brain, then you're not as cool as the Kardashians. You know, if it's marketed in that way or whatever, I think people will go for it much faster than they will than if you just say, we're going to implant Big Brother in your brain and 1984 is going to become a reality, which will be the case. I mean, I'm sorry to say, but it will be.
Maybe the advertising will be better, though. If the algorithm matches you to the stuff you like.
Oh my God. I don't know, man. That's my worst nightmare. An advertisement that I can't turn off. I'm out.
Have you seen the ones in the retail space that do the whole facial recognition and then they look up your social media likes and dislikes, and then the ads in the store are kind of catered to you because you're there in the store?
I mean, I saw that in the movie Minority Report, and I could see that it was coming.
Good evening. You can move the old-fashioned John Anderson. 21 provides gourmet cuisine.
John Anderson, you could use a Guinness right about now.
Out, John Anderson.
I worked for a company that owned a bunch of convenience stores, and they were moving all of their self-checkouts to this technology that used like a facial scanning recognition thing, so that when you came in as a return customer, it recognized you for your form of payment and would make recommendations to you based on your last purchases. Just when you walk up to the little self-checkout thing, and so it would be like, hello, Bill. You bought Cheetos last time. We've got a new kind of Cheetos. Want to check it out? You know, that sort of thing.
Our algorithm shows you're probably out of Q-tips about now.
Yep. It's been about a month and a half since you bought Q-tips. We know you like Q-tips.
Bill, you've been buying an awful lot of condoms lately.
Can we recommend the morning after pill?
No.
Bob, we see you're buying Magnum Ultras.
What if our health companies get a hold of the data? They can see what you're buying and kind of guess what you're going through.
Yeah. Hey, you've been eating Pringles a lot. We're going to raise your healthcare premiums.
Well, you've bought nothing but frozen pizza and beer, so we signed you up for Tinder.
Yeah, social credit score, that's what they're calling it, right? If you're an asshole, you lose social points and you can't do stuff.
Have you seen that episode of Black Mirror?
Uh-uh.
Yeah, this girl is trying to get somewhere, and when you go to get a seat on an airplane, they check your social media score, and she's just 1 point shy of getting the seat, so she's got to go rent a car, and then shit happens while she's renting the car. Her score keeps dropping throughout the episode, and she loses it. She just fucking loses it. Yeah, Black Mirror is a neat little show. It's a glimpse into some dystopian future.
It's anxiety horror. That's what I found it to be like.
It's not glimpses. It's preemptive programming.
Now we will take a break for some advertisements. Please support our sponsors. Just imagine this could be your advertisement. Please reach us at theblindalchemypodcast@gmail.com to provide sponsorship. And now, back to the show.
I watched this show that was so dismal and gray, and I couldn't figure out for a long time what kept me drawn into it, because it wasn't very exciting. There wasn't a whole lot of action. It was one of those, you know, murder mystery things. But my wife finally figured out that it was the tension. They just know how to build tension. And like, it, I know you're right. By the end of the episode, I'm fucking white knuckling the remote.
I've got to watch another episode. I can't take it.
Two seasons of this we watched, I think a total of 24 episodes. And they lead you in so many different directions. And I don't mean just them looking at the picture of the guy and going, hey, it could be this. I'm talking about like kicking the door in, guns drawn, on the ground, mother, to like no less than 10 people.
Wow.
Seriously. All different directions. And then at the very last 8 fucking minutes of the last episode in the second season, it's somebody that you never would have fucking thought. Like, none of those people.
Crazy.
Yeah, it drags you in all these directions, and the tension is so high. And then at the end of it, it's just like a complete twist. And I was like, this show is awesome! But when you watch it, it's just so bleak. You know, there's not a lot of facial expressions from the main character. Like I said, there's not a whole lot of action in it. There are like arrests and stuff, but it's not like Game of Thrones episode where there's fights all through it, you know?
You remember what it was?
Yeah, it's called The Killing.
The Killing?
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, The Killing. That's great.
But you know what I'm talking about? It's so dark.
It's completely bleak, though. Yeah, very bleak.
And for some reason, you just want to keep going.
Yes. It is compelling.
Every episode lead you down one path, and at the last second they switch it. And so you want to watch the next one.
Like, right.
See what the proof was or see where they go next. Oh my God. I love it, Joe. We're in the next part now, the later seasons.
Okay. That's one of those shows when it ended. It was over too soon. I wanted more of it.
What got me was 2 whole fucking seasons. I mean, in the show, it's really only like a month's time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2 whole seasons of jerking you. It's the it's the
yeah.
It's the no, it's
oh, fucking spoilers, dude. I'm not gonna watch it now.
You need to.
Thank you for joining us, John Buxton and Lunchbox. Always glad to have you gentlemen with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for being here with us. I'm your host, your guest on the quest as we float to the sea of frequency that we call reality. Love you, ladies and gentlemen. Please hit us up on every social platform you can find. Be safe out there. Come back and talk to me, all right?
We would love to receive your feedback and your questions for advice. Please email us or send us a voicemail. Our address is theblindalchemypodcast@gmail.com. Find, like, review, subscribe, and contact us on Facebook, Instagram, Patreon, Twitter, and YouTube at The Blind Alchemy Podcast. All one word. Please subscribe to this podcast on your podcast player. We are available on Spotify, SoundCloud, and anchor.fm/The Blind Alchemy Podcast. Please tell all your friends, enemies, and any strangers to listen to our podcast. This will help us bring joy to everyone. Text-to-speech services were provided by freetts.com and readloud.net. Various audio clip content used for the purposes of satire were located on youtube.com. Thanks to all the musicians, composers, engineers, vocalists, and content creators. We would like to extend a special thank you to the world's greatest musicians, sound designers, and engineers at Hairline Productions for their help with the composition, performance, editing, production, and recording of both the original music and today's show. Please like their content on SoundCloud.